We are on 1 Kings chapter 12, verse 1.
Vayilech Rechavam Shechem. Rechavam goes to Shechem. Ki Shechem ba kol Yisrael lahamlichoto.
Because that's where all of Israel came to put him up for kingship, to crown him.
Vayhi kishua Yeravam ben Nevat, v'hu odenu b'Mitzrayim asher barach.
Yeravam heard, he was still in Mitzrayim, b'nei amel shlomo, v'yeshav Yeravam b'Mitzrayim, and Yeravam sat in Mitzrayim.
V'yishchu v'yikru lo, and they sent for him, v'yavo
Yeravam chol kal Yisrael, and Yeravam comes with all the people of Israel, v'yidabru el Rechavam leimor, and they go to Rechavam and speak. First of all, there's some problems with this verse, because with these verses, which is, one gets the sense, I've always gotten a sense of trepidation on the part of Yeravam. But take a look at verse 2, it says, Vayhi kishmo Yeravam ben Nevat, when Yeravam ben Nevat heard. But it never says what he hears. Not only that, if we continue on the pasuk in parentheses says, Vahu odenu b'mitzrayim, he was still in Mitzrayim when he heard whatever he heard, Asher barach mipnei hamel shlomo, because he ran away when Shlomo wanted to kill him.
Vayeshev Yeravam b'Mitzrayim, and Yeravam settled in Mitzrayim.
Now you could say that Vayeshev Yeravam Mitzrayim is an extension of his running away. You follow? But who then he's still in Mitzrayim because Shlomo wanted to kill him, and he settled in Mitzrayim. You could say that. The only problem is that you don't know what he hears, because if you go back to the beginning of the pasuk, it becomes dangling. Vayhi kishmo Yeravam ben Nevat. Now you have this parenthetical idea. By the way, where was Yeravam? He was in Mitzrayim because he ran away from the king and he settled in Mitzrayim. And then it says Vayishlchu Vayikrulo, and they send for him. What did he hear? I guess you could say he heard that they sent for him, but it's backwards, right? Normally it should be. It's not quite clear from verse 2 what it is that he hears.
Well, you see what I'm saying?
What does he hear?
Whoever sent for him brought him the news that Shlomo was dead and that Rechavam was taken over, and he should come make his move, or he should come and represent the people. What I found strange was, here it says all Israel is in Shechem,
right?
And who's sending for him to come and represent them?
But the Rechavam is king of sentence.
There is. It's a difficult, syntactically, it's a difficult sentence to deal with. I also, if I look at verse 3, Vayishlachu Vayikra'ulo. Now that's not completely unusual, but the double verb is noticeable. First they send for him, then they call for him. I just get the sense, and I really don't have any proof, it's just with the sort of the corrugation of these verses, that Yeravam's not so hot on coming back. I just get that sense. That they have to, like, they say he hears, but then he stays in Mitzrayim, and then they send for him, and they call for him. I get the sense that there's trouble getting him out of Mitzrayim. I don't know, that's not so important, because it doesn't really affect the rest of our story. Although it may talk about the personality of Yeravam, but there's really no way to prove it from the verses. They're just syntactically difficult, so it probably pays to just move on. Let's get to the actual meat and potatoes. Pasuk Daled. So they all come together to Shechem. The first question is, why Shechem? So normally the place where one would, first of all, they have the right to enthrone the king, to crown the king. The king is automatically the king. How come the king's automatically the king? Because his father was the king.
Is the first king that was actually crowned?
Second, the first king was actually crowned was Shlomo HaMelech.
Yeah.
And the only reason why he had to be crowned, because he was the son of a king, is because he didn't actually deserve the job. Adoni rather deserved the job, and they had this big conflict over it. And because they had a big conflict, you had to go through the process of enthronement, because otherwise you don't know who's going to be the king. Now I realize that we have more of a kind of, like in modern days where we might have kingships, so there's sort of a ceremonial enthroning process or crowning process, but that's not what they're talking about here. They're talking about the idea of crowning this king. But what do they need to crown a king for? And even if he's already the king, I think the answer is pretty much obvious. I think there's a threat here that is, we'll decide whether you're going to be the king. And the idea of Shechem is also very significant, because Shechem is not where you expect the king to be enthroned. Where would you expect the king to be enthroned? Yerushalayim. Where is Shechem? It's very significant, by the way. Shechem is in a border city. We're in chapter 12, verse, good evening, chapter 12, verse 4, almost to verse 5. Shechem is a border city between Ephraim and Manasseh. That's very important. You can't say, well, maybe they wanted a nice, even border between north states and south states, because if that was it, they would have put it in Beit El. Beit El is a border city. You got Yehuda's over here, and then you have Yerushalayim, and that's a border city in between Yehuda to the south and Binyamin to the north. But as we've already seen, Binyamin's actually going to go with Yehuda. So now, if you want to take a look at it, you could really say that southern Israel is Yehuda and Binyamin. The border between southern Israel then and northern Israel is Beit El. That's the border. But that's not where they go to Shechem to say, we're going to enthrone you here, we're going to crown you here. Where they go is to the border right above Binyamin is Shevet Ephraim, a big chunk of the land of Shevet Ephraim. Above that is Shevet Menashe, in between Ephraim and Menashe, which means you're in the heartland of Yosef territory, which is significant, of course. Bless you. Is where they say you have to come to be throned. And obviously they told him they had to come because otherwise he probably wouldn't have shown up. Why go to Shechem? Shechem was not even one of the cities that was mentioned. There were other cities that were mentioned during Shlomo's rule of being significant. Tadmor, besides Yerushalayim, Tadmor, Gezer, there are other significant cities. Shechem, as far as we know, is, you know, Chazal say it was a place for troubles. Everywhere, everything bad happens in Shechem, and it probably is still true today. It hasn't changed much. Some things don't change. So I think this is a given statement. You have to come to the heartland of Israel in order for us to enthrone you. And you know who's going to be there? Yerubim's going to be there. Our leader is going to be there, which means we're an organized entity and we're sort of forcing you to come. And I think that's a politically, that's something which really shouldn't surprise us politically that it's happening. But obviously Rechavam feels, that is Rechavam the son of Shlomo, feels that he has to go along with it. Which begs to ask a question. Oh, let's read what they say to him, actually. I'm sorry. Verse 4. Avicha hiksha ulenu. Your father hardened our yoke. A yoke as in, you know, a yoke like a burden. V'ata ata. And now you. Hakel me avodat avicha kasha. What we want you to do. Good evening. I'm glad you came at 7:15. I'm very sorry. Where was I? Verse 4. V'ata ata. You now, hakel me avodat avicha akasha. What we want you to do is lighten up the load. Ume ulo hakaved asher natan lanu aleinu v'na'avdecha. We want you to chill out a little, and we will serve you. The question begs to ask, I think the obvious question here, and he says, by the way, vayomer aleihem luchu od shloshim yamim, go 3 days, yeshuvo elai, and afterwards come back, v'yelchu am, and I'll give you an answer in 3 days. The question that you have to ask, I think, is what's going on in the mind of the northern kings? It seems to be that the northern tribes, it seems to me that there are two possibilities of what they're planning or thinking. Anybody? What do you think? They come and they say, we want you to come up to Shechem, which is a very powerful political statement. And they've got Yerubim there ready to go. And they say, we want you, Rechavim, the son of Shlomo, to burn the load, unburden the load, unburden the burden, or unload the burden. And if you do, we will serve you. V'na'avdecha. It's very simple, very straightforward. I think there are two possibilities here. Anybody? Think about what's going on in the minds of the northern kings. I think there are two possible political possibilities going on in the minds of these northern kings, which is with northern tribes.
Well, they'll either accept Shlomo's son as king because there was a dynasty already formed. He's not Shlomo.
Right.
He's not brilliant, he's not this, he's not that, but they'll go along with the dynasty if he lightens up.
So what you're talking about is sincerity. You're saying that they're sincere. They call him up to Shechem, showing him who's boss, and they say, if you lighten up the load for us, we will sincerely go along with you.
How do they show him who's boss?
Well, they brought him up to Shechem. Shechem was deep in, that would be like in the North. Imagine America during the Civil War, you know, North and South. And what was the name of the president of the Southern Federation? What was his name?
Jefferson Davis.
And he goes, you know, I really, Abe, we like you, but we want you to come down to Florida for a little inauguration session, you know. it's a powerful statement there. It really is.
Well,
that's correct. Absolutely. And we'll see. He didn't go up the end. He came with soldiers. And all of Israel is there. They have their own soldiers also. There's quite the conflict going on here. But the question that I think it's begged to ask is, they don't attack him when he's down there. They don't try to overthrow him. They ask him a question. One possibility that you're saying is that they're being sincere. I think that there's another possibility.
Doesn't he make a statement?
Who, Yerubim or Rehavim?
Rehavim. This is like
Absolutely. I think that the fact that
they
he's going to go up there.
Them, and then they asked him, and then they
Well, they called. They called him there because they show up there first. They definitely show their show up there first. Based on the verses, they show up to Shechem, and then they call to.
Yeravam.
Yeah, they call. Well, they call to Yeravam. Yeravam shows up, but then they come to Shechem, and then they come there to Lahamlich to enthrone him. So obviously, they said, "You want to be our king? Come up here." I think that has to be. But I think that you're right. I think that Rechavam, or the southern Rechavam, could play things more. I say, fine, Shechem's my country also. I'll play that game. I got no problem with going into your territory. Now, I think that there's another possibility.
You don't know if you knew what the prophet said.
Ooh. See, that's a key thing. Because, again, we tend to look at these things religiously, and that's not wrong because it's a religious book. Well, let me read you the Radak here. That's exactly what the Radak points out. The question is, did they know about the prophecy? Because keep in mind that right now it looks like the Northerners are being sincere, if we take them at their word. But if we take them at their word, the question is, do they or do they not know about the prophecy? So let me read you the Radak's opinion of David Kimchi. It's a pretty sharp opinion, but it bears paying attention to. Radak is interested about the fact that why is all this going on in Shechem? So he says like this: Ki Shechem ba kol Yisrael. They came to Shechem. Shechem haya mishevet Ephraim. Shechem was in Ephraim's territory. V'nira ki anevua asher achiyah shilonu liravam no da'a. They knew about the prophecy. It seems to me that they know about Achiah's prophecy, which makes sense because even though Achiah met him in the middle of a nothing field, they obviously send down to Yeravam to be the, you know, to call back to be their leader. Why would they have to do that if they're just trying to make a point about how they want to chill out? Then just doing the crowning in Shechem should be enough. They specifically go get Yeravam, who was a rebel against the previous king, who was prophesied to be the next king, and he shows up, and in my opinion, he doesn't show up all that willingly, and he shows up to do this thing. So the Radak, I think, appropriately says they knew about the prophecy, which seems viable, right? Usually prophecies were not kept secret, although they did meet alone in a field. Shalchu Yisrael v'karulo u'bikshu limso alila. Why did they call him up to Shechem? Because they were looking for an excuse. They were looking for an excuse. L'hasev hamalucha el Yeravam. In order to make the kingship go after Yeravam. They couldn't just break away. That would be non-halachic, unacceptable. They call up, or immoral, or rebellion, or whatever it is. Rebellion without, maybe with justification. According to the Radak, they call him up because they know he's going to act like a jerk. They know it. They give him something. They give him something that he's just not going to come across. And then they're going to say, well, we would have gone with you if you would have come along with us, but since you're not listening to us anyway, we're out of here. That's the Radak's opinion. And I think there has to be, you know, sometimes you do get that kind of things in political plays where, you know, the offer is made, not so much to make a viable offer, but specifically to get the other guy to say no. Because once the other guy says no, you can always say, well, if you're going to be no about it, then I could do what I was really planning on doing anyway, wink, wink, right? That's the idea here. And that's what the Radak says. L'fichach lo ratzu lavo Yerushalayim. That's why they didn't want to go to Yerushalayim. El ba'ol l'shchem shu me'Ephraim v'Yeravam me'Ephraim. He went to Ephraim. Yeravam was the head of Ephraim. Everybody knew what the point was. And they made him come to Shechem, forcing essentially Rechavam to act negatively to the clear symbolic, to the clear message that we're delivering, in order that they would have an excuse to break away. So the doc's quite clear. It was all set up. It was all 100% set up. I think those are the two possibilities. I guess it depends on how cynical you feel about the northern tribes. And we tend to be rather anti-northern tribes. Not only that, on one hand we're anti-northern tribes because, you know, we're Yehudinics, because the 10 tribes were lost, and they were a lot worse most of the time than the southern tribes. But there's another thing, we do know about the prophecy. Doesn't the prophecy in fact say that Yeravam was going to be the king and Rechavam was going to lose it? And if they knew about the prophecy, well, how could it go right anyway? You follow what I'm saying? They were trying to sort of jumpstart a prophecy that it almost looks from. Right? We know there's a prophecy, you don't believe in God's prophecy, but we believe in God's prophecy, we're the frummies, so we're going to make sure that prophecy takes place by dragging you up to Shechem where you're going to autofill the prophecy. Last time we saw that Achiah Shiloni was jump-starting the prophecy, and now as an extension we seem to say that they're jump-starting Achiah's prophecy. Those are the two possibilities, really, and it's hard to say which one, but I believe the verses indicate that it was sincere. which was your first opinion, and I'll tell you why. The most extraneous thing, whenever you're reading Navi, the most extraneous thing is usually the most important thing. The most extraneous thing, this thing in this passage is the three-day instance. Isn't that weird? You go away 3 days. Isn't that weird?
Well,
isn't
he's
that
consulting with his wise man. Like,
okay, how long does it take to consult with your wise man? And not only that, we'll see that he knew which wise man he was going to go after anyway. He had already made up his mind. We'll see. But isn't it kind of extraneous information? Now we could start looking for if I was a Kabbalist. Come back tomorrow and I'll give it to you. The question is, what's the 3 days? Now that would automatically, for a reader of Tanakh, that would sort of ask you to go look for another 3 day situation in this book. I can't find any. Okay, I can't find any 3 days. So now we can start saying, well, let's go find somewhere in Tanakh a 3 day situation. Okay, I got a good one. The most famous 3 day situation, of course. No, way before that. No, the first 3 day situation is a little bit before that. It's Matan Torah, the Shloshet Me Hagbalah. You go 3 days, you prepare yourself, and when you're all nice and holy, then we'll get ready to go. That's pretty much the most famous 3 days. I guess, if I was given a pulpit speech, I may be able to come up with a connection between those two stories. Well, and Rehavam actually thought that he was giving Matan Torah, and therefore he wasn't deserved to be the king. But, I mean, that's just pulpit stuff. I mean, that's not a real analysis of the text. I don't think that's, I could say it, but then again, I can say anything I want. I don't think that it really has a solid textual analysis. Well, I do that sometimes also, like last time with my thing about the meat that you can eat in the midbar. So there I was going, it was like a Hail Mary. So sometimes it happens, every parshan, and there's a big difference between me and the parshanim, but every exegete has his own moments of flights of fancy. I would look for something closer here. I don't know why 3 days is important because of the number three, but what is interesting is what happens at the end. So here I'm going to jump a little bit and take a look at Pasuk. The 3 days is repeated here in the chapter. After he decides he's going to go with the bad advice, and we'll get to what that good advice and bad advice, right now we'll leave it on the side. Take a look at Pasuk verse 12. After he decides which way he's going to go, it says in verse 12, chapter 12, it's easy to remember. Vayavo Yeravam, don't be confused by the fact that there's a missing aleph, it doesn't really matter. Vayavo Yeravam, does everybody see it? V'chol ha'am el rechavam bayom ha'shlishi ka'asher diber ha'melech le'mor. Exactly, and I'm putting the word exactly, but it's not a far stretch, exactly as the king had commanded them, shuvu elai biyom ha'shlishi, return to me in the third day. What does that tell? I think that tells you something there about the relationship between Rechavam, the son of Shlomo. First of all, he's not called you or Rechavam here. He's called, what is he called here? He's the king. Vayavo Yeravam kol ha'am el Rechavam bayom ha'shlishi kasher diber ha'melech le'mor. And by the way, the word diber le'mor is quite clear. When you put those two together, it's always talking about mitzvot. Vayomer means to say. Diber means to say. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe le'mor. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe le'mor. That's always a command. Always. Every single time. He gave the command, come back in the third day. And they said, okay, we'll wait 3 days. To my mind, this indicates that they were willing to go along. I think when you read, what's the significance of the 3 days? I don't think the number three is significant in themselves. The fact that they're willing to wait, I mean, they're excited. Something's going to happen. The pressure is intense. You want an answer, you want an answer now. Well, maybe tomorrow. I'll give you a day to think about it. Go 3 days, do whatever it is I want you to disband for 3 days. I'm going to ponder it, and I'll give you an answer in 3 days. And what does it say at the end? They came back in 3 days exactly as the king had commanded them. To my mind, that means two things. One is, I think it's like you originally said, that they were quite sincere, which means we really shouldn't look at this too religiously. We shouldn't say, well, they knew about the prophecy, so they were trying to fulfill the prophecy. That's not how people thought. God takes care of himself, and we do things based on what we're going to do. And the truth is, there's something that trumps the prophecy, which is paying attention to a king. Prophecy can't override paying attention to the king. And they said, listen, we may or may not know the prophecy, but we're giving you a chance. And I think the psukim, keep in mind that these psukim are written by the redactor of the story. Now, we don't know who the editor of the story is, a prophet, clearly. Whether it's Yirmiyahu at the end of the, 200 years later, or whether it's Achiah Shiloni writing a story which is then copied later by Yirmiyahu, we don't know. But what seems clear is that he's saying they were willing to listen to you, which is, of course, an accusation. Because if you didn't have these psukim, to my mind, it would have been up in the air. These northerners, they were up there. Who knows, maybe Rechavim thought they were going to kill him. It was a big trap, and he's nervous, and they show up with all their people, and they bring up the rebel who fought against his father. What do they think he's going to do? You know what I'm saying? I think, to my mind, the Radak has something going here. If it wasn't for those verses which said that they specifically listened to him and waited 3 days exactly as commanded them, I would have leaned towards the Radak sense of there's a, you know, it's a big fake. It's a big political fakery. But I think these psukim, at least in the eyes of the prophet, are saying something very important. Rechavam didn't blow it because God told him he had to blow it. Rechavam blew it because he blew it. It wasn't like he could say back, well, they weren't going to listen to him anyway, so what difference does it make? That's not what the prophet is saying. They were absolutely going to listen to him, and that would have changed the whole prophecy. Oh, but now you have the famous question, which is, I thought there was a prophecy. You follow? I mean, then you get back to this religious issue. The prophecy was that I'm going to take away the 10 tribes because of what Shlomo did. I'm not going to take them away from Shlomo, I'm going to take away from Shlomo's son, Rechavam, and I'm going to give the 10 tribes, I'm going to split the kingdom. So if they know they're going to split the kingdom, then why should they go through this whole negotiation anyway? Just, good evening. Why not just split the kingdom?
Yes, aren't prophecies irreversible unless it says that if you do tshuva, you can go back?
Well, that's the point. Can't you always do tshuva? Which means prophecies are all... Why don't you put it the other way? Aren't prophecies always reversible unless the person doesn't do tshuva? Why not? Are you a glass half empty person or a glass half full person?
In that case, a glass half empty, definitely. Because if you really think about that, Yirmiyahu, he had one prophecy after the other. It was actually said that it's going
to
happen.
Oh, yeah, we'll see. We'll get to Yirmiyahu later.
Yirmiyahu, it's a very clear case. If you do tshuva, you're going to be saved.
Yeah. Correct. But I think in my mind, any time that there's... That's true. By Yonah's prophecy says, I want you to do tshuva, because if you don't tshuva, you'll be destroyed. Achia Shilonai's prophecy is not like that. It's because you did bad things, therefore things are going to go bad for you. But in my mind, even though it doesn't, I think the implicit, educationally, maybe I'm speaking as an educator, if I tell a kid, you took somebody else's homework, I'm going to give you an F. The idea is don't take somebody else's homework. That's just sometimes you can put it in a negative sense and sometimes you can put it in a positive sense. I want to show you the Malbim, if I can, the Malbim, who is, by the way, lived in the 1800s, 19th century. I have to tell you, the Malbim was the only Perush who wrote on all of Tanakh. He was a tremendous, people barely know the Malbim, really. Baruch Hashem, he's in the latest Mikra Kedolot. Like whoever's in the Mikra Kedolot is holy, whoever's not in the Mikra Kedolot is not holy. That's how it works. Mm-hmm. Some editor makes an opinion on which ones are on the page, and that becomes the holy one. I can give you an example. I can tell you, tell me the most important super commentary on Rashi, and 9 out of 10 people will say, of course, that the person who comments on Rashi is? Rashi on Torah. What's that? I wouldn't say Ibn Ezra was specifically a super commentary. I mean, a commentary whose goal was to tell you what Rashi was thinking. No, because it's before Rashi, much before Rashi. Usually people say Siftei Chachamim. Right? Remember the Siftei Chachamim? We got the little numbers in Rashi. If you look at the Krokodil, you know the numbers of Rashi. Siftei Chachamim asked the question, what's bothering Rashi? Before somebody wrote that book, it's always, what's bothering Rashi? People know the Siftei Chachamim. The Siftei Chachamim is an anthology. It's taken from other super commentaries on Rashi. I mean, I think there's original stuff, but it's much later and much less good. They're the two most famous ones are now famous, was the Re'im, which is Rav Avram HaMizrahi, Rav Eliyahu HaMizrahi, who wrote the first major super commentary on the book. And the other one is a little known thing written by Rav Bakrat, who was Sephardi, so a lot of people didn't know him until Nechama Leibowitz started to use him. But people know who's in everybody knows who's in the Mikra Kedolot. So Baruch Hashem. I'm not trying to say that people in the Mikra Kedolot are all a bunch of losers and that they're just in there because somebody made a mistake. No, there are important people in the Mikra Kedolot. Don't get me wrong. The Radak is probably the most important parish on Nafi. Rashi's there. Ben Ezra's there. Kli Yakar is there. Very important people are there. Although the later Mikra Kedolot have more in there that's better. And this Mikra Kedolot has the Malbim. I have to say, if it wasn't for Mikra Kedolot pulling the Malbim, we wouldn't know who he was. The Malbim was the only parish to write on all of Navi. He's an incredible all of Tanakh. Every single book in Tanakh he wrote on. He was also a Gemara scholar. He was a chief rabbi. I can't remember where, somewhere. He was an Eloi. He was one of the greatest minds and thinkers, and he was also a maskil, by the way. He knew all of the maskilish things. And when I say a maskil, I'm not talking like today's maskilim. I'm talking about the 1800s maskilim, when it was a question of religiosity versus anti-religiosity. You know, you talk about the maskil movement in Europe during the 1800s. He knew their language, he writes like them, he was a politician, he was fully aware of everything that's going on. He's a wonderful parish. He was a tremendous philosopher, and he highlights this, I'm sorry I took a detour, and he highlights this very important issue about, well, if I told you this prophetic thing was going to happen, there's nothing you can do about it anyway. So then the question is, if there's nothing you can do about it anyway, what's the whole dialogue going on back and forth? It's all fake. I might as well take chapter 12 and rip it right out of my book. It's worthless anyway. I know there's going to be a rebellion, and I know it's going to be the bottom line of the rebellion, which is the northern tide is going to break off. Why bother with the whole story if it's a fait accompli? If prophecy is prophecy, period, rip out the text.
So what you say, it implies that if you had considered and done some kind of tshuva, you could have turned out differently.
Yeah.
You have another chance. Doing those 3 days,
yes.
You died in one day versus another.
Yes.
You didn't take the advice of the old man.
That he decided not to. But you know what? Before I want to show you how bad Rechavam was. You shouldn't think that Rechavam is just a robot. Take a look. Actually, before we go into that Malbim, which is important, since you mentioned that, I want you to look at the different verses. You have to pay very close attention to how things are phrased. You know, we're not Rabbi Akiva's here. We can't darshan things on a Vav or a Yud or a Tag. But there are things that if you take a look closely on how words are conjugated, you can see a tremendous difference. Take a look at the advice of the elders. That's his father Shlomo's advisors. Do you want a, there's a Tanakh here. Here you go. Just a Bible. Here you go. Oh, I'm sorry. You don't have one? We have more. No, yeah, there's more. Here. Well, we got for when Menachem came in. So sister donated a bunch of them. So now we have Tanakh. What's that? Yeah. Baruch Hashem. How are we doing time-wise? Oh, my goodness. Did I really take that long to talk about a few
psukim?
Oh, I'm sorry. My apologies. By the way, next week, before we lose track, next week is at 8:30. And I believe it's in the Beit Medrash, although Harold didn't tell me why, but he said it to the Beit Medrash at 8:30. So next week I'll send out a letter, of course. And it's in here, so maybe that's it. And Daf Yomi, I think, is smaller than our share. We usually get about 10 people or so.
So isn't that going to interfere with Mincha?
No, it's right after Mincha Marav, because next week I think Mincha is 8 o'clock, and it should be exactly half an hour. I think 8:30 will be okay. I hope so. I'll mention it to Harold, mention it to the rabbi. Yeah, next week will be 8 o'clock, I believe.
Yeah,
so I think it's okay. I think hopefully we're going to be 8:30. I'll speak to Harold. If we take a look at the advice, let's go take a look at the advice. The two possibilities. Verse 6. Vayivat Amelech Rechavam et
Hazkenim. Verse 6 of where?
Chapter 12.
Chapter 11.
Sorry, no, chapter 12.
Yeah.
Yeah, right after he said, give him 3 days. Vayivat HaMelech Yerachavim. So Rechavim took advice. Et HaZakenim. Et is really im here. In many cases, et is im. Asher hayu omdim et pnei Shlomo Aviv b'hiyot ochai. Lay more. So first of all, you have to pay attention. Why? They were advisor to Shlomo while he was still alive. Obviously, if Shlomo's dead, they're no longer his advisors. You know, they weren't hovering over his casket. Well, I think what he's trying to tell you is obvious. As soon as Shlomo died, they got the pink slip. I think that's an important statement right there. What is your advice? To tell this nation what they're at. What should I respond to this nation that wants me to chill out and they'll serve me? They say, if you will serve them, and you will really be their servant, which is a totally different view of how Shlomo used to do things. And also be very nice to them when you speak to them. They will serve you forever. They will be loyal. Which means, according to the advisors, by the way, they think it's for real. They think that the northern kings are very, very sincere. Immediately, by the way, before he hears the other advice, not like he has choice A and B, and he goes with B because he likes it better. He gets rid of the advice right away. But what's the real proof? The proof is in the conjugation. Take a look at this. He speaks to the youth, But we're going to get back to that word. It's crucial. Asher gadlu ito, which grew up with him, asher ha'omdim lefanav, that are with him now. Vayomer leam, now watch the conjugation. Ma atem noatzim, was is your advice, v'nashiv davar et ha'am hazeh. What is nashiv? We will. You see? Do you see the difference between the language? When it was the elders, it was, what is your advice that one would, you know, l'hashiv, it's an infinitive, I don't know, who's doing it? What would be your generic advice one would give to these people? That's not what he says to the Yiladim. He says, what is your advice, asher nashiv, that we will respond to, which means before he even hears it, he knows what's going on. Now I have a question for you, and this is crucial. How old are these people?
Young ones?
How old is Rechavam?
Supposedly the same age as Rechavam.
I would think so. That's what it says. They grew up with him. How old is Rechavam? So here's the shocker. Take a look at chapter 13. No, I'm wrong. Chapter 14, verse 21. Shocker. You ready? Not only that, we'll find out how old Shlomo was in a second also. This is a very important passage. Chapter 14, verse 21. Rechavam ben Shlomo Malach Yehuda ben 41 shana. I think that's an important idea of the word. By the way, first of all, how long did Shlomo rule for? 40 years. So when was Rechavam born? A year before he became the king. So that gives you an idea of how old Shlomo was. Now Shlomo could theoretically have been 14. It's possible, but I don't think so. Probably in the late teens, I would guess. You know, we always think of Shlomo being like a five-year-old, like some kind of, you know, baby king who had to be taken care of. It can't be. This is proof in the pudding. He had a baby already before he was a king. He wasn't just, I know the Torah, I always say that, the Navi paints things in black and white because he expects you to know that things are more complicated. We think Shlomo's this, oh, young guy, I want to be the king, please. He's a married guy, he's got a kid, he's not a babe in the woods. I guess you could imagine that he was hooked up with somebody at age 13, but it seems a stretch.
You don't know his mother.
But this is the important thing.
We do.
We'll find out another time. But I want to finish this point because it's crucial, actually, even though it doesn't have to do with our story. But I'm going to tell you something important, which really bothers people about Nafi. There's a story by a guy named Elisha. He takes over for Eliyahu. And he comes to a town called Beit El right after he gets the big nod. You're going to be the king. And he goes to Beit El. And Beit El, what happens? The Yiladim came up to him and they say, you're a baldy, you're a baldy. And he gets so upset about being insulted that he calls in the bears, not the team, but he calls in the actual bears and has them all slaughtered, 40 of them, 50 of them, whatever. The first thing you need to know is baldy doesn't mean what you think it means, and what it does mean I can't get into right now. But the most important thing is Yiladim doesn't mean what you think it means. If somebody says to you, why would he murder a bunch of kids? They weren't a bunch of kids. That's not what Yiladim means here. They were immature. They were foolish. They acted like children because they had no concept whatsoever. That's what it's talking about. What's the raya? Because here I could guarantee you that they were 40 years old because it says that they were appointed and they grew up with him as he was growing up in Shlomo's life. That's proof of the point that Yiladim does not necessarily mean, I don't mean it can't mean children, but it's not necessarily mean children. If there's reason to assume that it wasn't, one shouldn't assume that. So when they disparage Elisha for killing young kids, it's because they don't pay attention. People don't pay attention to Sukkim. Well, proof of the pudding that they weren't children.
Why did they put it in there?
But usually we have the word na'arim against Zakenim. Here we have Yiladim, which someone could argue is always an age, but here's proof in the pudding that it's not, and that's important for, I think, a Jew to know, because otherwise one could think the worst possible things about Elisha.
Why does the word that can be interpreted?
Well, again, 2,000 years later it could be interpreted that way. Back then they knew. Back then they knew. Also they knew, I'll show you later, that when those kids come out of Beit El, they're not kids. They're fully fledged prophets. People knew that was a possibility. It would be like calling somebody, I guess, a young Turk or a babe in the woods. They know they're not a babe in the woods. They know that they're, you know, babe in the woods has a certain meaning.
They were young in mind.
They were the younger generation.
Young in mind.
Yeah.
All right, I think we better stop here. I didn't get as far as I wanted. I just want, actually, if I will, the Malbim. The Malbim struggles with the very issue, and he says, I won't read inside, he says,
don't
in fact, prophecies... No, I think
no.
Mincha 8:05. Yeah, so we started later. We don't usually have the time that we did. Yeah, that's why 8:30 is better for next week. We'll have more time. But I'll just end off with this idea of the Malbim. The Malbim says something fascinating. I want to find it inside. I'll blow my time. The Malbim says it's clear that all prophecies could be undone. This one too. But the only problem is, and I don't like this Malbim, but I have to tell you, because you can see the Malbim struggling with it. He says the only prophecies that can be undone are negative prophecies. You have done this, so I'm going to nail you. So stop doing it, do tshuva, and he won't nail you. You don't have to say if you stop doing it. Even if you say I'm going to nail you, it could be undone. But the Malbim says the problem is that this is a double-edged prophecy. It's bad news for Rechavam, but it's good news. The prophecy also at the same time is good news for who? For Yeravam. So therefore, since it was good news for Yeravam, that kind of prophecy, when God promises he can do good things for people, that kind of prophecy can do. I still don't like it. I don't like it. I don't think this is all set up. I don't think it's cut in stone. I think Rechavam had it and lost it. I think it's quite clear from the Psukim. And I think it's quite clear that Rechavam, it wasn't the northern kingdoms that weren't willing to bow to Rechavam. It was Rechavam that wasn't willing to listen to a word that the northern kingdoms say. We'll see, he actually speaks in sexual terms, which are quite disgusting. We'll see that next week. He uses vulgar terminology. You don't usually get this type of thing, Tanakh. And it shows you that he was a yelid. He was not a wise man. And to a certain degree, the northern tribes were wise to break away from him. And that's where we go to last week, where I said, but not for the end of times. One day they would return.
Tremendous tragedy. At this point in time, he lost the 10th tribe.
Tremendous tragedy. Tremendous. But it wasn't losable until the end. It could have been gained back. But Yeravam would wind up doing worse things than Rechavam did. But we'll see how this goes. Anyway, have a nice...